Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
This is the Awful Announcing Podcast presented by BetDSI. This is episode number 38. Ben Heisler with you. And ahead of the NBA playoffs tipping off, we were fortunate enough to have Kristen Ledlow of the NBA on TNT and NBA TV get a chance to spend some time with us for this very podcast. And for many reasons, she was tremendous. She was real. She was authentic. And I think we get that from many of the guests that we have on the show. But you'll hear it throughout where there's these moments of introspection, of sort of understanding sort of this culmination of what she's been able to accomplish and do, and genuinely appreciate it and share that level of enthusiasm for the work she does in that moment of talking to her about it. And listen, we've had a lot of seasoned veterans on this podcast, and Kristen, by all means, is a pro's pro. She's one of the best in the industry. But it was also really cool to hear those times when in discussing moments or stories from her career, within her answer, truly be able to reflect in real time. That doesn't happen a lot, especially when you're talking to people that have been in broadcasting for many, many years. She also told some great stories as well. And really, I think she's the perfect guest to have on with the NBA playoffs about to start. And speaking of the playoffs, before we get to Kristen, this very fine show, the Awful Announcing Podcast, is presented by BetDSI.com. I use it, I love it, and I genuinely recommend it. And man, did I have fun on BetDSI on Wednesday night. You had all the breaking news coming in for the end of the regular NBA season, all the injury notices. I was trying to balance both my bets at BetDSI.com along with the daily fantasy teams and sending out information to FantasySportsMarkets.com. And it was just an exhilarating night, especially with their new primetime betting feature. So, you know, you had news coming in. If you wanted to bet the game live, it was super easy to do so in real time as these games were going on live. And now you got playoff basketball, playoff hockey's going on as well. It's just the perfect time to experience what it's like to play at BetDSI. And they've been paying out winners for 20 plus years. They remain the top rated across the betting review sites. And listen, you don't have to be at a computer to play at BetDSI.com. Their mobile site is super fast. It's super accessible. I love that wherever I am, I have a really good mobile experience available to me at BetDSI. And I mentioned it's not just for NBA and NHL. There's NFL. There's college football and basketball, soccer, UFC. You can even bet on politics and reality TV if you choose to do so. If you think there's something worth betting on, chances are BetDSI will have it. And for Awful Announcing Podcast listeners, you all get a 100% bonus match. All you have to do is go to BetDSI.com, use the promo code AWFUL100. That's AWFUL100. So you go, deposit a couple $100, and they will match that couple $100. You can do it for 100, you can do it for 50, whatever you want to do, they will match that deposit. Again, promo code AWFUL100 over at BetDSI.com. Remember, it's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI.com. Here we go, our conversation with the great Kristen Ledlow of NBA on TNT and NBA TV. So Tuesday night must have been insane for you because you had Dwayne Wade's last game, you had Dirk's last game, and then at around, like, what, 7, 8 o'clock Eastern, Magic just has this impromptu press conference where he's like, you know what, I don't really want to do this anymore. So was that an insane night for you?
Well, I was in D.C. to cover the Wizards-Celtics game, so it seemed like it was going to be a relatively calm night for us because most of the Celtics were not even on the trip, and the Wizards are, of course, already at the playoffs. So as that news started filtering in, we're like, wait a second, this night is about to go much differently than we thought it was. So, yes, very much so. One of the craziest nights in the NBA that I can remember.
I think you're right, because I'm trying to take everything in perspective together, where you have these two iconic figures and the amount of time. I didn't realize Dirk had been in the league 21 years. I heard a really interesting anecdote. I wish I could point out where it was from. But he basically would tell everybody that he was 6'11", even though he was like 7 feet, 7 foot 1. And it was because he didn't want to get put into the situation where people would just look at him as a center and play him at the center spot. He wanted to be a small forward. He wanted to be a four and move him out. And he was just such a fascinating guy. And Dwayne, too. You must have had all these different types of interactions with him over the last several years.
Yeah, and that's interesting that he did that, that he said that about his height, because I was very insistent when I was about 14 or so years old about saying that I was 5'11 and then 5'12, because I did not want to be 6 feet, not because I didn't want to be a center, but because I didn't want to be 6 feet tall. So in a very different way, I understand, Dirk. But yeah, you know, both of those guys have been very special to me in different ways. Both of them I've gotten a chance to hang out with on Inside Stuff. I've gotten a chance to interview for TNT. I've gotten a chance to work and walk alongside for these last few years. But I think they're more so special to me, not just because of the work that we've done together, but because I grew up watching them as well. You know, I was in high school when Dwayne won his first championship. I was a child when Dirk got into the NBA. In fact, I believe it was the first year that I started playing basketball that Dirk was drafted. If I'm doing the math correctly, and I started playing basketball when I was 8. So the entirety of my love for this game has been marked by Dirk in some way, and of course later Dwayne as well. And it's such a special thing to get to watch them go out the way that they wanted to, you know, for Dwayne to get to go on a farewell tour, and
right,
then for Dirk to just announce it like, oh hey, by the way, in case you didn't know, I'm done after tonight, you know. I feel as though their final seasons were perfectly them, each of them, you know, and for them to have left their mark on this game I love so much, and for me to have been able to be impacted by each of them and to be able to have worked alongside them as well is something that I absolutely will not forget, not just in my career, but in my life of loving this game.
All right, so you started playing basketball at age 8. Was it a game that easily came to you, or did you have to work really hard to get a feel for it?
So I hate to be the person who says, oh, actually, it was very natural for me. But I will say I was so unusually tall for my age that I felt so out of place all the time. Taking photos with my class, you know, second and third grade, and looking like the substitute teacher that already is as tall as the actual teacher, and hunching down always, just even around my friends. I never stood tall, and then started playing basketball, and I think it was the first time I remember feeling entirely secure in the height that I had, solely because I realized it gave me an advantage. So really early on, it did come naturally to me. It was something that I loved very much from the very beginning. But I did work really hard at it as well, and I loved it. It wasn't something that ever felt like a job to me. It wasn't something that ever felt like a necessity. It was something that I loved. I loved the teams I played on. I loved the teammates that I had. I still keep in touch with the coaches that I had. The game marked my life from such an early age, and to sit here and talk to you about basketball on a podcast, and ultimately to talk about basketball for a living, is overwhelming to me sometimes. When I think about what I dreamed of as a little girl and what I get to do now because of this game, it truly just blows my heart up.
Did you anticipate going down the road of some sort of athletic career? You played at an All-American level in college, but did you ultimately want to associate broadcasting into it as well?
I did. In fact, I wasn't entirely focused on playing basketball and volleyball in college. Ultimately, those things were really fun for me, but I went in with the sole focus of preparing myself for a career in sports. And early on, I started majoring in communications because I thought maybe I'd like to do PR, perhaps, for an NBA franchise, or maybe I could work in marketing. And as I got the opportunity to start working in media, even locally, as part of our school's broadcast team, I fell in love with it. And then started thinking about being a broadcaster on a big level. I had the opportunity to call the men's games at my university and then play in the women's games. Switch it around, because I would play first and then shower and not look great and then call them in games. But I started thinking about being a network broadcaster one day for the NBA, and my it's not called a guidance counselor in college. What is it called? The person that helps you figure out what you're doing next. Advisor. My
yes,
advisor.
There you go.
Yeah, it's been such a long time since I was in school. I don't mean to reveal my age, but my advisor did say to me, you need to know that if you pursue this industry and you work solely at the local level from now until the end of your career, that you're going to love it enough to do that. And I thought about it for a couple days, and is this something that I love enough to, even if I make no money at it, even if it's something that I get a chance to do on the side while I work another full-time job, is it something that I love that much? And I decided, yes, absolutely, it was. And I always dreamed of getting the opportunity to cover the game on the biggest stage, but I didn't go into this expecting it either. You know, I went in thinking that whether or not I ever make any money doing this, whether or not it's ever my full-time job, it's something I love enough to want to commit my career path to.
And the other thing too, Kristen, is that we're sort of an interesting generation compared to most broadcasters in that, you know, there's more celebrated diversity in broadcasting than we've ever had before. And just to take this as an example, Andrea Kramer, who's just the best, she was on our podcast several months ago. And I remember asking her about her early influences in broadcasting. And she said there really weren't that many women to speak of. And, you know, consequently, she didn't really know what she wanted to do when she got to NFL Films. And now it's obviously gotten so much better than it was in the past. But who were early influences for you? And did you feel like at any point in the age that we grew up in, that it was going to be an option for you, that you knew that there were going to be people that had blazed that path for you already?
That's one of the coolest things I think about being a woman in sports now. As you know, not only are you continuing to open doors for women behind you, but there are ones who have now gone before you. So growing up, when I was little and loved the game of basketball, no, there was not anyone that I looked at and thought, oh, I'd like to do her job, because there wasn't a her in any of those jobs. But as I got a little bit older, and of course, Doris Burke blazed a trail
sure.
for, I think, every single one of us that is
right.
covering the NBA on a national platform. I have always looked up to Rachel Nichols, to Michelle Beadle,
yeah.
to Sage Steele, and to have the opportunity to then get to not just meet them, because I probably would have paid money to wait in line and meet them, but to get to work alongside them, to get to learn from them, it's I'm at a loss for words, and I'm not at a loss for words often, but what's the coolest thing, I think, about being a woman in the NBA now is when I was little and taken to Orlando Magic games, it was not really a possibility to be involved at any level. But now a little girl who's taken to an NBA game can just look out on the floor and see, okay, so I can be a sideline reporter. I can be a play-by-play broadcaster. I can be an analyst. I can be a referee. I can be an assistant coach and perhaps one day soon a head coach. And it's such a special thing to get to see that now, that we're part of this wave of women who yes, are doing things for the first time or the only time, but watching it grow to a level that, you know, for sure, the ones coming behind us are going to be so much better.
Well, and also hearing you talk about your early influences when, you know, you were talking about Doris Burke and Rachel Nichols and Michelle Beadle, so on and so forth. I also read that you've really gone out of your way to help out a lot of those other young women in the sports media industry too, like everything from resume tape reviews and critiques and giving advice. And I'm curious when you made that something that you really wanted to prioritize.
I made the decision early on. I just didn't have the time or resources to do it earlier in my career, and also probably no one would have cared who I was to help them try to become anybody. So it was something, though, that I thought about, because very early on I started reaching out to some of the women that I looked up to, and it impacted not just my career but my life that I reached out to Michelle Beadle, someone I idolized, and she not only got back to me, but started regularly listening to and watching my work and keeping in touch with me and encouraging me and telling me that I could be better than she was. I very, very vividly remember her saying that to me. And I decided then that I wanted to be that for others, because I also remembered those who I reached out to who didn't take the time to respond
sure.
or who, you know, And so I decided early on that I wanted to be that for others. And now, because of the platform that I've been given, I have the opportunity, the time, the resources, and now the experience as well to be able to help champion and coach some of those young women that are coming up behind me, whether it's young female journalism students or young female broadcasters, to take the time to get to be able to review their work and to be able to not just give them feedback, but to give them encouragement and to be able to believe them forward is a huge privilege to me.
I always like to ask broadcasters this question on this show because they always sort of have this interesting story to mark the time in which this has happened for them. And I'm curious when you started to finally feel not only comfortable on air, but to be able to develop your own voice, to maybe not sound like somebody else that you used to appreciate or emulate, but that you started to sound like Kristen Ludlow.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that Beadle taught me early on was that I'm not going to be a better Michelle Beadle than Michelle Beadle is, so I shouldn't try to be Michelle Beadle.
Right.
I'm not going to be a better Doris Burke than Doris Burke is, so I shouldn't try to be just like her. And so to step into finding my own voice, it's not something that comes easily, and I encourage young, especially female broadcasters, but for young men who are pursuing this industry as well, to get into the podcasting space, to get into the radio medium, to start writing as well, because I think some of the things that are often looked at as, well, that's behind the scenes or that's not on camera, are some of the most valuable things that I've done in my career to help me not only develop my own opinions, but to really step fully into my own voice, because now I know that nobody's going to do what I'm doing better than me, because nobody can be better me than I am
right.
me. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
You know, and trying to emulate anybody else is, well, frankly, it's a waste of time, and there's no opportunity to be better at being that person than they already are. And so I think that one of the things that has been most freeing for me is to realize, you know, there's room for all of us at the table, and I should be entirely myself all the time. And what I bring to the table, nobody else is going to bring, because I'm entirely unique, as is every other woman that is covering this game on the national level. And so that's one of the encouragements, like I said, that was given to me very early on, and something that I tell the other young women that I have the opportunity to encourage as well.
You mentioned all the different other work that you've been involved in, whether it be on the writing side, whether it be on the radio side, but you spent a lot of time working in radio and working and hosting and being an on-air personality. Do you miss that side at all?
I do a lot, all the time, in fact, to the point that I regularly pitch those opportunities to the network that I'm at. So, It certainly is where I gained the most confidence as a sports broadcaster, because I learned to fill the silences. I learned to emote when you can't look into a camera.
Right.
And really feel that was where I found my voice. Learned to develop an opinion, to express it in a quick and concise and yet still explanatory way. And so certainly that's something that, like I said, I encourage young women and young men to get involved in as they're pursuing this industry, but it's definitely something I miss as well.
So tell me about when you got the call to eventually go to Turner. And it was right when they wanted to revive Inside Stuff. And again, we're both children of the late 80s, early 90s. We're right around the same age. Inside Stuff was an iconic show. So what was that process of not only getting that call, but then being able to take the show that was a staple of NBA childhood and also be able to put your own stamp on it?
Yeah. Oh, wow. I was working full-time in radio at the time. And my co-host, Rick Kamla, who also is a host on NBA TV,
told me
that NBA TV was reviving NBA Inside Stuff. And I was like, oh, you got to get me an audition for that. And, of course, they had already lined up all of the auditions for it. But in my mind, I thought, if I could just get in that building for one day, I could meet Grant Hill. I did not think, oh, this is going to be my job, or this is going to change the entirety of my career and life. I just thought, I got to get in there so I can meet Grant Hill. That's going to be awesome. And so ultimately I was called in to do an audition. From what I've been told, it was the very last audition of the day.
Oh, wow.
And I went in there and was like, okay, be cool. Don't hug him. He doesn't know you. You know, don't cry. That's going to be much more embarrassing. But Grant and I hit it off from the very beginning. And of course, that day there was instant chemistry, but to this day, he's still like the big brother that I never had. I call him first on almost everything. And now to watch him become a Hall of Famer and an NBA owner and an NBA analyst in the face of college basketball is really spectacular. But I can say that he changed the course of my career and life, because I did ask for an audition solely to meet him. I didn't think it was a job that was going to be mine. And so when I got a call a few days later that I was still in the running and that there were only a few people left that they were considering, oh, wow, that would be crazy. It was the first time my mind had considered the possibility of it being my job. And I came down with the flu almost immediately.
Oh,
I don't
no.
think those two things are related, but I ended up having to go, you know, I'm sick. I have the flu. I'm beaten down. I'm getting up every single morning at 3:30 to go into the radio station. And as I'm leaving urgent care, my phone gets service again, and it says that I have a voicemail. And I have a voicemail that says that I was chosen as the host of NBA Inside Stuff. I started sobbing in the car. When I tell you sobbing, I don't know if it was the flu or the flu medicine or just the overwhelming nature of that phone call itself, I was weeping. And so I'm like, okay, well, we got to pull it together, because you have to make a call back. You have to tell them that you accept. And so, you know, I stopped crying, played it very cool. Yes, I am honored by the opportunity. I'll see you guys soon. Probably hung up the phone and started crying again. But to then, wow, I don't think that I think about this season of life often enough, because as I sit here and talk to you and remember it, to think about every single step along the way, shooting our first commercial to announce that NBA Inside Stuff was back, shooting our first episode, shooting my first interview, which was in Charlotte with Kimba Walker, taking a dance class. You know, I think about all those things now and the career that it set me up for, but also just the goodness, some of the most fun and exciting experiences of my life, working alongside someone who became one of my best friends. You know, so when I sit down and actually think about that little stretch from getting that call and sobbing in the car while taking flu medication, I really don't know what it was exactly, but you know, to where it grew, it's really special.
How often do you really get an opportunity? Because you're so busy with your job and you're traveling constantly and you're working so many games and you're back in the studio. Like, just in hearing it in your voice, it sounds like this is one of those few opportunities where you're able to like look back and be like, damn, like I was able to do a lot, and it's happened very quickly, and I've worked my butt off and here I am now. And it sounds like it's starting to dawn on you a little bit as well.
Yeah. And goodness, I remember thinking when we revived Inside Stuff for the first season that if this is the only season of my life that I get to do this one thing, I'm going to enjoy every single moment of it. Like, if this is the one year I get to do it, and then we went on to do it for 5 years, you know? But I remember thinking, like, just don't miss this moment. And that is really how I've approached the entirety of my time with this family of networks. And yes, there are a lot of flights to get on, and there are a lot of phone calls to take, and there are a lot of emails to respond to, and there are a lot of things to prepare for, whether it be games or shows or interviews. But there are these moments throughout each season where it dawns on me, like, I'm standing in the middle of TD Garden, and I just talked to LeBron James at the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, wait, what? Like, how did I get to be the person chosen to stand here? Like, it's overwhelming to me when I think about the impact that the game of basketball has had on my life, and now the opportunity to play a small role in the story of basketball is I don't know that there is a word. If I come up with one, I'll get back to you.
You use the word Big Brother to describe your relationship with Grant Hill, and have him be one of the first people that you would call in these types of moments and situations. When you first started working together, and obviously so much of what you're doing now is you're building relationships and impactful relationships with both players and coaches in the league, did he give you any advice in those early stages on what it's like to have and build these types of relationships?
He did, and it was really cool because I was a trained broadcaster and Grant was a trained basketball player.
Right.
So I asked Grant questions all the time about the NBA, about their schedules, about their lives, about the best way to approach these guys and these coaches, while Grant asked me questions all the time about how to be a broadcaster and how to use inflection in your voice and where to put your hands when you're talking on TV. I actually have a funny story about that because the first time that Grant ever worked as an NBA analyst on TNT, it's live on television. I'm watching it in my home. I get a text message. Again, it's live. We're not in commercial break. And it's from Grant. And he asks me, when they put me on camera, what should I do with my hands? I'm like, oh, wow. So he's really starting at square one with this thing, just on the other side of it, whereas I was starting at square one with the NBA. So
right.
It was really cool because he and I bonded quickly, having experience in such different areas, but needing experience in both of those areas. So we were able to learn a lot from each other very early on.
Do you remember the first NBA game that you got a chance to work on?
The first NBA game that I got to work for TNT on as a sideline reporter was at Oracle Arena and was covering the Golden State Warriors. I remember thinking, why would you guys put me on TNT with the Warriors for the very first time I've done this? Like, what, like, you guys got a lot of faith that I'm not going to botch this thing. And it was in, I don't actually remember the date. I would probably have to look it up. I believe that it was in November of 2015 or so. I had already worked a couple of seasons as the host on Inside Stuff. I had already signed on to be a full-time personality with NBA TV and TNT, but I had not yet gotten the opportunity to cover a game in a live capacity. And it's funny, when I think about the questions I asked, I'm sure my producer was like, wait a second, why did we put her in this job? Because I asked questions like, okay, so where do I stand? And at what point? Okay, so after the first quarter, and I talked to which coach? Okay, so where's he going to be? Okay, so how do I get
attention? They really threw you in there.
Right. And I had never actually, and I don't know actually if they know this or not. Maybe they're going to find out at the same time our audience is finding out that I had never done sidelines for a live game, not ever. And they put me on TNT with the Golden State Warriors. So it's like, all right. But it was an incredible experience for me because what I was told and what I've continually been told by our family at TNT and NBA TV is to go out there and be entirely myself. And of course, there are logistics to take care of, and there are certain commercial breaks that you got to get into and get out of, and there are certain things that you've got to keep in mind. But they've told me from the beginning and continue to tell me with every new opportunity that they've given to me to just be entirely myself. So I'm sure I was nervous, but I don't remember the nerves of it as much as I remember thinking, this is awesome. Like, I get to just talk on TV about this thing that I love, and I get to be here at a basketball game that I would have bought a ticket for anyway. I'm sure that there were nerves involved, but my memory of that night is just that I can't believe that I got picked to do this. I really can't.
I don't know if I've actually ever asked anyone this before, but you were talking about the questions and whether or not you felt like those were the right questions and where to stand and so on and so forth. And it got me thinking, is interviewing Greg Popovich really as intimidating as it looks?
It can be, solely because depending on where the game is, at what point the game has
that
reached,
makes sense.
And how well his team is doing, you've got to tailor the questions for that moment. So sometimes you have the opportunity to go a little bit deeper into it and to intertwine statistics with a little bit of context. And sometimes it's simply, what needs to change in the fourth quarter? And you're not going to like the answer no matter what. So yes, it can certainly be intimidating, but I've had some great moments with him as well. And I've asked him off the air what he considers a stupid question and what he doesn't. And he laughed and said, you know, it's not the stupidity of the question. He's like, if I can tell that you're paying attention to the game, then you're doing your job. He was like, the problem is sometimes I'm caught in this moment and I don't want to answer your question. So I take it with a grain of salt and do my best to at least provide the audience a little bit of insight into that coach in that moment. And sometimes that is all it is.
Well, the reason that I always sort of question whether or not it's as intimidating as it looks is because you hear these incredible press conference moments with Popovich, and he can be so light and so funny that to me, that would always sort of be in the back of my mind. So if I'm seeing this very serious Greg Popovich giving you one or two word answers, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, come on, Greg, come on, this isn't really who you are at this moment.
Well, it's a little bit different because what we have to do is live on national TV during a game when these coaches would much rather be in their huddle talking to their guys. So it is very different when we're in a press conference or when we're, again, not during the middle of a game.
Right.
Because I will tell you that he's been one of the kindest and most insightful coaches that I've had the opportunity to work for, and I think that I'm better at my job because I've had the opportunity to work alongside him. I've also had the opportunity to get to know him a little bit when we're not on camera, and to spend some time talking to him about his experiences, about his view of the world, because he's seen so much of it and he's done so many things. Again, I think that I'm better at my job because I've had the opportunity to work with him.
I mentioned a lot of different relationships that you've built with players and coaches, and you were just talking about it with Greg Popovich off the air. And a lot of those you've worked on and you've had for several years. And the NBA is just such a personality-driven league. But yeah. I still think there's so many fans that would be surprised to know that, say, for example, Blake Griffin is this really funny stand-up comic during the offseason, and Victor Oladipo has this amazing singing voice. And, you know, with all the different profiles that you were able to do with Inside Stuff and just getting to know so many of these guys off the court, were there any stories that you learned about that you just remember at the time feeling completely blown away after learning something about them?
That's a great question. And I'd have to think about the answer. But Inside Stuff definitely gave me, I think, an advantage in the job I'm doing now because of the relationships that were built. Because the first time that I met Blake Griffin was not putting a microphone in his face to ask him three quick questions during the middle of or right at the end of a game. It was because we had a chance to hang out for Inside Stuff, you know? And so many of these relationships that I've built are because our time together was, you know, started because we were playing horse or because we were playing spades or because, you know, and so I certainly think that it's given me an advantage in the job that I have now because I do have those relationships. I do remember thinking, actually being very surprised by the first time that I sat down with Draymond Green. Now, I say that at this point, and everybody knows, oh, well, this is a huge personality and a guy who's very funny and a guy who enjoys talking trash. But when I sat down with him for the first time, he was a little known warrior. And that was sweet. That sounds like a kid's book, by the way. But he was a little known warrior. He was not one of the big personalities. He was not someone that a lot of people knew of unless you were very closely following the NBA. It was before this, you know, dynasty run of championships. And I remember sitting down with him and thinking that was, first of all, the fastest 45 minutes of my life because he kept it going the entirety of the time. He's hilarious, and he could easily be one of our personalities on TNT one day. And I remember saying that for years then afterward when I was asked, oh, who's your favorite interview or who's the most surprising interview or who's got the best personality? And over and over and over, I would say Draymond Green, and everyone's like, wait, what? Really? And now I feel like in these last couple of seasons, people have had the opportunity, whether you love him or you hate him, first of all, I don't think that he cares. Second of all, he's somebody that you remember. And that was something that I was surprised by very early on. And I told him afterwards, as we got up, you realize what you just did is not regular, right? Like that you were able to continually be quick-witted and to fire back at me for 45 solid minutes, that's not a usual thing that happens with young men in the NBA. And he blew me away with that interview, and I've said for years that he was not only my favorite but most surprising.
I think you're spot on with Draymond. I think he's going to be a phenomenal analyst, and I think it's okay if analysts sort of rub people the wrong way every so often, because sometimes they have controversial opinions, and Charles Barkley isn't everybody's cup of tea, but you know that you're going to be, you know, you're going to want to listen to what he has to say, and I think Draymond is certainly the same way. Kristen, you've been super generous with your time. I just have a few more questions for you. Obviously, the playoffs are coming up. TNT will have coverage of the Eastern Conference Finals. And really, I think that the top four seeds each have these fascinating storylines. You have Milwaukee leading the Eastern Conference with an MVP caliber year out of Giannis. Toronto going back to the postseason, not having to worry about LeBron in their sight and doing it without DeMar DeRozan. Philly has to deal with Joel Embiid's health. And then Boston's biggest enemy might actually be themselves. Plus, I know that you're keeping your tabs on your Orlando Magic from afar as well. But when it comes to these top four teams, which of these storylines do you think stands out most to you?
Wow. I think that the Milwaukee Bucks, as consistently great as they've been all season and as spectacular as Giannis has played, they've been the most surprising because they didn't just have stretches of greatness. They have been consistently great all season long. I've been most surprised by them, not because I didn't think that they could contend in the Eastern Conference, but because they have sat atop the league without any stretches throughout the entirety of the season. So I think I'm most surprised by the Bucks. I'm most excited to see Giannis in the playoffs on the biggest stage as he's put together an MVP campaign this season. With Toronto, I think it could be the season that they finally get over the hump. There's no LeBron James in the Eastern Conference anymore. There's actually no LeBron James in the playoffs, and I still can't get over that.
Right.
But I think that they have a real opportunity now with the depth that they've put together. But then you think about the 76ers, and this is a team that, by all accounts, on paper, if you line up each one of these players and you simply look at it there, at the talent level, the raw talent on that roster, they probably have the second most talented roster, starting lineup anyway, in the NBA behind the Golden State Warriors. So are they going to be able to put together the chemistry in time to be able to make a successful postseason run? And then you look at the Celtics and think, all right, well, this was the team that all year long every quote-unquote expert expected to win the Eastern Conference. And one by one, we watched them all hop off that bandwagon thinking, okay, there's no way that the Celtics put it together at this point. And yet, here they are clicking right before the postseason begins. And because of the talent that they have, because of their defensive focus, because of their coaching in Brad Stevens, and because they have one of the greatest closers currently in the game in Kyrie Irving, I still have great confidence that they could win it as well. So that was a very long way of saying that those top four teams in the Eastern Conference, not a single one of them would surprise me by representing the East in the NBA final.
No, and assuming all four of those teams end up going through and then it's two of those four eventually for the Eastern Conference Finals, it's going to be incredibly compelling television on TNT. Before I let you go, Kristen, two quick things that I have to get your take on. The first is it's been noted you're a Space Jam fanatic. And I'm sure you've thought about this for quite some time. Have you thought about who would be your pick to play the Monstars?
Oh, actually, that is not something that I thought so
really?
Much about how I could finagle my way into the film that I haven't thought a lot about who would actually be in it. All right. I think that Anthony Davis made his push for it this week. Well, if not at the trade deadline anyway.
Right.
With his That's All Folks t-shirt. I can certainly see AD playing one of the roles.
I like it.
Giannis has respectfully bowed out. So Giannis is no longer someone I would consider a Monstar. I think Blake Griffin would be a great one because of his personality. I mean, goodness, this is now officially a Draymond Green fan podcast because I think that Draymond would be great as well.
That's a
because
good
wild
card. Because
when you think about
card,
it, it's
yeah.
not, it, right, it's not like, okay, these are the five best players in the NBA. It's who's going to make a great film. Who's going to have that Charles Barkley moment, you know, where it's like, guys, we suck, you know, from the first one. who are going to be the guys whose personalities we remember? And those are some of the guys that immediately come to mind.
I like those calls. I think you could certainly make an argument for Embiid as well. I think he has to be considered.
Oh, goodness. You know what? I'm so glad you brought that up because I would have been so angry the moment I hung up the phone and realized I did not mention Joel Embiid. And are you kidding me? I did not mention Joel Embiid. He has not only the most, I mean, how do you even describe his personality?
He's the best.
He is the best. Right, truly the best. How about that? The best personality, and it is not close. He absolutely has to be part of it, right?
He has to be.
And as we bring it full circle, it's like he's found his voice.
He certainly has found his voice. He very much has. Finally, you got a chance to be a part of the NBA on TNT Family Feud crew. It was you Charles, Kenny, and Shaq. And I would imagine that there had to be some stories from that night or from even the game that might have been cut out. Anything that you can share from that time of playing Family Feud with the guys from NBA on TNT?
The first thing that I can say is that it was one of the funniest days that I've ever been a part of, to the point that the makeup artist had to continually come out and fix my eye makeup because I was crying laughing that hard. And then, as if I hadn't actually been there, I'm crying laughing when I watched it on television a few months later. Just one of the funniest and dumbest things that I've ever gotten a chance to be part of, which really, honestly, is the way that you could describe most of the work I've gotten to do with the other TNT personalities. But the one thing that I can tell you that did not appear on air is that we all rode together in a bus from our hotel in L.A. out to where the studio was. And someone had downloaded Family Feud practice round, like it was a game on your phone where there's a timer and there's questions, and so we're thinking, you know what, we're going to get really good here in the car, and then we're going to go out there and we're quite obviously going to win. And I was baffled that these guys could not in 20 seconds think of not a right answer, but not any answer. And so I'm thinking, as we get there, I'm like, okay, there's just, we have no shot here. We have absolutely no shot. And then for some reason, it was like, it was like a gift from above that we were given not only the right answers, but fast answers. There's no other way to describe it. It was divine intervention, because if you had been on that bus and heard our practice rounds, you would have thought, there's no chance that they even get one of these right. And for us to go out there and dominate the way we did, I feel very, very proud of that.
It was a lot of fun to watch, and it was also a lot of fun to talk to you. Make sure you guys are following Kristen as well. She is on Twitter, at Kristen Ledlow, as well as on Instagram, and make sure you guys are watching her all throughout NBA on TNT's coverage, along with NBA TV's as well. This was a joy. Thank you so much for your time, for your stories, and look forward to doing this again soon.
It was a joy for me as well. Thanks for having me.